Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Brandy M. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, December 2nd, 2021. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we are at page 102, third paragraph. Many of us keep liquor in our homes, ending with anything about alcohol by one who hates it. We're going to comment on both paragraphs. Today's readers are Winnie N for the 12 steps, Patty L for the 12 traditions. Readers of the text are Barbara W, Eileen M, and Lois P. Leslie W is our newcomer greeter, and Shelley E will do announcements. The reference numbers for Wednesday, December 1st, 2021, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting is 18170. That's 18,170. And for this morning's 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, the reference number is 18174. That's 18,174. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message through of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Winnie N. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Winnie.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Winnie N., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in California. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you so much, Winnie. I'll now ask Patty L. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Patty.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Patty L. from Massachusetts, compulsive overeater. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. This is Patty L., Massachusetts. Thank you for letting me serve.
Thank you, Patty. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive readers only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 102, third paragraph, many of us keep liquor in our homes, ending with anything about alcohol by one who hates it. We're reading through those two paragraphs. I will now ask Barbara W. to begin reading. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. Barbara W., recovered compulsive overeater from Washington State. Many of us, and I want to mention I'm celebrating 19 months of abstinence. Many of us keep liquor in our homes. We often need it to carry green recruits through a severe hangover. Some of us still serve it to our friends, provided they are not alcoholic. But some of us think we should not serve liquor to anyone. We never argue the question. We feel that each family, in the light of their own circumstances, ought to decide for themselves. We are careful never to show intolerance or hatred of drinking as an institution. Experience shows that such an attitude is not helpful to anyone. Every new alcoholic looks for the spirit among us and is immensely relieved when he finds we are not witch burners. A spirit of intolerance might repel alcoholics whose lives could have been saved had it not been for such stupidity. We would not even do the cause of temperate drinking any good. For not one drinker in a thousand likes to be told anything about alcohol by one who hates it. Well, I'm not sure I can relate much to this because I've never been one who bakes. And I've heard of so many, fair number of people I've spoken with who bake and have no problem. Actually, I'm grateful that I have never been in such activity. And I don't keep sugar in my home because I live by myself. But I will say the holidays do set me up, even though I don't go to parties. And really, in my age bracket, there isn't much. I'm 76 now. And I follow a guided meditation every morning. And one of the phrases in it, we always show kindliness, patience, tolerance, and love. And when I saw the spirit of intolerance, I was just thinking a spirit of tolerance would welcome compulsive overeater or an alcoholic, saying, well, you know, if that's okay, you know, if it's okay with you and you can have a couple of fine, but I never could. And sometimes it's just what a person says. And if people push the issue, I say, well, you know, I just don't care for one right now. So I think with that, I'm going to pass. Thank you.
Thank you. And congratulations on your 19 months. All right. So let's get this meeting started. We will now open the lines for sharing. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share on this paragraph?
Wendy B.
Wendy B. Anyone else? Jump in, people.
Nancy L.
Nancy L.
Eileen M.
Eileen M.
Teresa C.
Teresa C. I love you guys. You're all coming in at nice times so I can get the names. Anyone else? Okay. Well, let's start off with those four. I'll tell you who I have. I have Wendy B., I have Nancy L., I have Eileen M., and Teresa C. Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning. This is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. And in that first paragraph where it says, we never argue this question, we feel that each family, in the light of their own circumstances, ought to decide for themselves. And I just love the fact that we don't presume to know what's best in another person's life. You know, we don't dictate to a sponsee what actions to take. You know, we allow God to be the director. You know, they get to come to an agreement with the family members, you know, if they are going to have junk food in the home, you know. And we don't try to control or push our views and opinions on them. And God made it so we all have choices, you know, and we have to carry the responsibility for making those choices wisely. And God speaks to each of us individually, and we don't have to go through an interpreter or someone above us to get God's directives. You know, we as a family go to God together to find out how we want to handle situations, you know, for the betterment of all involved. And, you know, we no longer selfishly impose our dietary guidelines on the rest of the family. We work out a compromise, you know, that works for everyone. And in my situation, you know, my husband has his own cupboards, you know, with all his junk food, and I have mine, you know, of my abstinent food. And, you know, we split the refrigerator in half too, and I know his food isn't mine, and he has no interest in my food. And, you know, so this is what works for us, but it won't work for others. You know, they have to figure out what will work for them. And that's all I have. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Wendy B. All right, Nancy L., you're up next. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Nancy L., recovering for today of my compulsive eating. I was real interested in this, in these paragraphs, because while they're talking about liquor and alcohol, my biggest problem, one of my biggest problems, I have a lot of problems, but one of my biggest problems was I'm a churchgoer, I'm Christian, and I worship, but every time I used to worship and they would announce we're going to have a fellowship, which means everybody bring in your covered dish of whatever, and I used to get just angry at every time, because I knew what my behavior was going to be like. I was going to go to that fellowship, and I would eat just very reasonable, just like everybody else did. But then when I got out of there and I went home, I usually stopped somewhere along the way, bought me bags of my binge food and took it home and ate for a couple of 3 hours of binging. And when I became very serious and realized this disease is going to kill me if I don't stop eating this way, I decided that I would still go to my church and worship, but when it was fellowship day, I was going to quietly slip out, not say anything to anybody. I'm slipping out and I'm going home for my abstinent lunch. And I did that for several months until I felt like I was strong enough. And especially, I had a special occasion to go down to the fellowship because I was going to welcome a dear friend of mine into the membership of our church. And here is this beautiful dessert sitting on the table that usually calls my name. And I had heard people talk about neutrality, and I experienced neutrality with that beautiful dessert. I looked at it and I did not want it. I did not indulge in it. I picked up something off of the table that would be in my food plan, and sit down and ate it and enjoyed it and enjoyed the fellowship of my fellows there at church. So through this program, I don't have to get angry over fellowship meetings anymore. I can choose to go or I can choose to go home. So it's my decision, and I make that decision each time there is one.
Time, please.
Okay, I'll wind up. But because of this program, I've grown into that through God's strength. I've grown into that. So I just say thank you to everybody and thank you for the program. And I will pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Nancy L. All right, I have Eileen M. followed by Teresa C. Good morning, Eileen.
Good morning. This is Eileen M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. And I'm just looking at this line. It says, many of us keep liquor in our homes. And also, we never argue about whether to, you know, have it in our homes or not. What I was thinking about in regard to this is that I do live with someone. I have a husband, and he bakes things. He does a lot of baking. I don't do any baking, but I don't have any interest in that. But he actually, in his first career, he was a chef. And so he loves to cook, you know, and he loves to do all kinds of food prep and everything. And, you know, this is going on every day, and I'm here, and I'm so grateful to be neutral. Before I recovered in 2016, I really believed that I had to control my external environment in order to be abstinent, and that was the only way. And I never thought it was possible to actually live with someone who had my binge foods in the house. I mean, it's just remarkable. The power of God is just so incredible. And, you know, I'm so grateful when I decided to seek God through the steps that it completely changed everything. It's just, you know, I have this complete freedom and I can go anywhere. And it's just so amazing to me. I can't get over it. I mean, on Thanksgiving, my husband baked brownies and he put them on the table. And it was the same kitchen table as I was eating my absent dinner on, and it just did not call to me. I mean, I could smell the brownies, but there was no reaction at all. And I'm just amazed by that. I'm truly amazed. And the other thing I wanted to say is that, you know, where it says we never argue this question, that reminds me of, you know, it's the same thing to me as not telling someone what their abstinence is or should be. You know, it's really each person needs to decide on, you know, based on their experience, what their definition of abstinence is. It's not my definition, you know, and to me that's, you know, practicing tolerance, because I really want to tell people, hey, you really shouldn't be eating that. That's not healthy for you. but I don't. You know, I just, because it's, the program's meant to be suggestive only, and I really believe that. I don't impose requirements on people. I just don't think that's right. Anyway, I'm so grateful for this program, and thanks so much for letting me share. My pass.
Thank you, Eileen. All right, next up we have Tracy C. But before we go to Tracy, I'll just tell everyone where we're at if you're new to the line. We read from page 102, third paragraph, so very bottom, many of us keep liquor in our homes, ending with about alcohol by one who hates it. So we read through those two paragraphs. So after Teresa, we'll get some more shares. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. My name is Teresa C. I'm a compulsive overeater and food addict in recovery. Just as I was listening to people share and, you know, reading those paragraphs, it just reminded me of, you know, what I've been told before in the big book about taking care of myself, keeping my side of the street clean, knowing that my focus is on me. And not trying to manipulate others or manipulate the situation to be what I think it should be. And I'm really grateful to program because when I look back in my past, that was how I lived. If I was in that type of a situation, I would, you know, in the past I have lived with someone who I thought I had a problem, you know, had a problem with alcohol, and I would purposely pick restaurants that did not serve liquor. You know, that's manipulation. And I'm so pleased now that in working the 12 steps, I see that now as my part of what was going on. With my own recovery, things have been going well, and really just gained a lot from focusing on myself and not trying to manipulate others. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Teresa C. All right, we'll open the lines for further shares. If you haven't shared in the last 3 days, please let me know your name.
Laura W.
Laura W.
Danielle M.
Danielle M.
Deb E.
Deb
Wendy
E.
M.
Wendy M.
Leslie W.
Leslie W. Anyone else?
Roberta B.
Roberta B. All right, we'll go with that. So I'll tell you who I have. I have Laura W., Danielle M., Deb E., Wendy M., Leslie W., and Roberta B. All right. Good morning, Laura W.
Hey, Brandy. Good morning, everyone. This is Laura W. I'm a recovered compulsive eater, anorexic and exercise bulimic in South Jersey. These two paragraphs, they really talk about humility to me, because if I'm, you know, if I'm feeling like I can, sorry, there's background noise. If I feel that I can't serve something to somebody, or if I can't go someplace, or if my outside circumstances are telling me I can't do any, I can't be around my alcoholic foods at this point in my recovery, we're not talking about step one where we admit that we're powerless. We're talking about having been through the steps and supposedly having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. If I'm not spiritually fit, that's what I need to look at. I need to look at, you know, number one, do I have a legitimate reason for being there? And number two, how am I spiritually fit? And if the answer is yes, then of course I go. And if not, then I get, you know, I dig deeper and I pull into my higher power. But we're careful never to show intolerance or hatred of drinking as an institution. When I first got abstinent, I was so judgmental. You know, I'd stare at you if you were eating my binge foods or my anorexic foods. I'd glare at my husband if he was eating ice cream at night. You know, things that almost like this attitude of holier than thou. I'm better than you because I don't eat that. And today, truthfully, I have it all over my house. I have teenagers. I have a husband who don't eat like I eat. And that's okay. I'm also experiencing a struggle with my 15-year-old daughter, who is anorexic at this point in her life. And, you know, as much as I want to shake her and say, this is what you need to do, my job as a mother and as a recovered woman is to be an example of the big book, is to recover, 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 get her the help that she needs, and then step back. I am not, you know, anybody's higher power. I am not anybody's, I have no right to tell people what to eat, what not to eat. You know, I'm a recovered compulsive eater. I'm an addict just like you. I just don't suffer from it today because of these 12 steps and because of God in my life. Thank you for letting me share today. I pass.
Thank you. All right. Next up, we have Danielle M., followed by Deb E. Good morning, Danielle.
Hello. My name is Danielle M., and I am grateful to be here. I am a still recovering compulsive overeater. I really appreciate this paragraph this morning and people's shares, and it kind of helps me to figure out where I am with this. And I realize that I am not as far along as other people who have shared, and I feel some hope in that because I hope to be further along. But I have particular people in my life right now that are compulsive overeaters, and they have a whole bunch of health problems. And at times, it is really hard for me not to feel really, really sad about their choices and to want to fix them. And so I'm realizing that I have to really kind of work on my own spiritual stuff and my own recovery program, but it is still challenging to be around them because I love them and I care about them. And so for me, listening to this is very challenging. And so I am grateful to be here, but it comes with a lot of sadness and grief because I know how horrible it is to be going on the way to really harming yourself with food. And so I don't want to see other people that I care about doing that too. So I am grateful to be honest about where I am today. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. All right. So next up, we have Deb E., followed by Wendy M. Deb E., share with us, please.
Hi, thanks. This is Deb E., recovered compulsive overeater in Israel. And the first thing this paragraph makes me think of is what I was taught early in program to, like, just repeat the mantra, it's not my food, it's not my food. And that got me through so much in the beginning when I was newly abstinent. It was harder to be around food that, you know, around my binge foods. But now it's been years. I mean, it's really like, I think most of what my family eats is stuff I can't eat. You know, like my binge foods are all around me. And it's just, it's a real testament to the miracle of this program of how if I keep that connection to my higher power and I'm at the service to this fellowship and just in general, how that is a miracle that, that we get to live and experience. And this part about that some of us think we should not serve liquor to anyone, you know, I don't, it kind of makes me cringe a little in the inside serving my binge foods to people because I think, like, I just want to say, like, you know, you don't really need this. But I don't say it because it's none of my business and I shouldn't assume that they're going to have a problem with it the way I had a problem with it. And even if they had a problem with it, I shouldn't assume that the 12 steps would be their solution either. And it's just kind of going on what has already been shared. Like, it is a great example of humility. It's like, that's not how I'm of service. That's not how I'm supposed to be of service by, like, telling people what they should eat and what the solution is for them. The way I can be of service is just by living the example. And I have people close to me who, in my opinion, seem to really have an issue with food, and they continue to go on, and it does make me sad. But like we always talk about, all I can do is make sure that I continue to recover And so sometimes I feel a little guilty about that. Sometimes I feel like, why do I get this miracle? They don't, you know, but that's not a question for me to answer. That's beyond me, you know, that's beyond my realm of being human. So it is just, it's so great to hear people share about this paragraph, and like the last few pages have kind of been on the same theme, and it's just so nice to be part of a meeting where people, like, you know, we're getting to celebrate this wonderful miracle about the program that, you know, when we are truly recovered, we can be around the foods that just took us down. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Debbie. All right, next up we have Wendy M., followed by Leslie W. Good morning, Wendy.
Thank you. This is Wendy, compulsive eater and overeater and recovered bulimic. I really like this this passage, even though I know, you know, it's kind of hard to relate to, but it is a good one. And if we just change it to food or sugar or salty, crunchy foods, you know, it's the same thing. So I'm on the other side of the coin too. I have gone to toast up meetings in bars where, you know, there's a lot of alcohol, and also gone to weddings and funerals and on and on. And I do well with those. What I don't do well with is holidays. I don't do well with holidays. I had my last slip on Halloween, and then I did really, really good until 2 days after Thanksgiving. And then, yeah, I picked up again. And it's, I talked to my sponsor. Talked to my sponsor about it, and she said that, you know, let's try and figure out what the triggers were. And I attribute that slip to holidays, being with family. They didn't have what I wanted to order that was in my parameters of my food plan. And so I just kind of threw my hands up and said, I give up. And that night, and I didn't way overeat, but I ate a lot more than I usually wouldn't take that food or that drink. So I do drink hot lattes, you know, and they have, but I'm trying to use my own stevia in it instead of having them put a flavor in it. And if I can get back on track, that will be good. Other than that, it was a great paragraph. I have teenagers. I heard someone say that. They had teenagers and my husband, and they all eat whatever they want to eat, and there's a lot of junk food. And then I have grandkids that come over, and there's a lot of junk food. But I have my own foods. You know, I'm not being deprived, and I don't feel deprived unless we go somewhere, and then it pops up. But anyway, love the paragraph, and that's all I have. I'll pass.
Thank you, Wendy M. All right, Leslie W., you're up next, followed by Roberta B. Good morning, Leslie. Leslie, star one to unmute. All right, let's go to Roberta.
Okay, I'm sorry about that.
Oh, there you are.
Thanks, Brandy, for your service this morning. I'm Leslie W., recovered compulsive overeater from Tennessee. And I really like this, what this paragraph talks about, because to echo what someone else said previously, it is about humility. But it's also about neutrality around my food. Means to me that I'm not only neutral with my food, but that I am neutral around other people's food too. And I am comfortable and confident enough in my own skin to be able, and this has taken me some time, but and some hard lessons to learn, but to be able to field questions from other people when they ask me why I'm eating something that's different from what they're eating. And also that it's okay for me to be different. It's okay for me to take care of myself. And I have learned that if I don't take care of myself, then if I don't take care of my abstinence, if I don't protect my abstinence, nobody else is going to do that for me. That is my job. That is no one else's job but mine. And so I do that, and I'm able to just be comfortable in family settings, even with family members commenting about what I'm eating. And they're not always positive comments. So, you know, it doesn't mean that I stop doing what I'm doing because I feel uncomfortable. I've had to learn the hard way that I'm worth protecting my abstinence, that God sees me as worthy, and taking care of my food is the way that I take care of myself and the way that I take care of my body and the way that I honor God with my body. And for me, that is that's it. That's my bottom line. I don't have to answer to anybody else for what I do, or feel like I have to defend myself for what I do. I know what works for me, and I don't try to tell anybody else what they should be doing either. And that's also taken me some hard knocks to learn. So with that, I'm going to pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie W. All right, Roberta B., you're up. And after Roberta, we'll take a couple more names. Good morning, Roberta.
Hi, Roberta from Southern California. I'm just reminded again this morning of why I am in a vision for you. I've been in here for 2.5 weeks now, and I've been in another program. I was in for 15 years and had abstinence for 15 years and met a man that loved to eat. And I thought, you know what? I'm tired of this. I want to just do my own thing. And boy, did it put me in the deeps of my compulsive eating like I'd never known before. And we're together almost 7 years now, and I've lived with him the last 3 years, and I've got food all over the place that doesn't belong to me. And reading this paragraph just reminds me that it's none of my business what he has. I need to step up the plate to do what I need to do to take care of myself. I've been trying to get abstinent for 2 years, and coming to a vision for you, I now have 13 days of abstinence, and I'm so grateful for that. And I see more clearly as I get more abstinence that I need to work a super rigorous program in order to protect myself of what's hanging around in the cupboards, you know. And it's none of my business what he has, and I just need to take care of myself. And you know, I've known that. I've tried to get abstinent these last, you know, 5 years, and I just can't. I just couldn't do it. And it took coming to really, and I knew that I needed to do the big book. I've never read through the big book all these years I've been in program. And I know that this is where the answers are. And I know that the answers were on the steps, but I really didn't work them. And it's so wonderful to be with a group of people that really get that and that can go before me and be an example to me and just be there for me. And I want to be there for everybody else too. I do so much better of wanting to give instead of receive, and I'm allowing myself to receive right now. And I just get to let sit in the cupboards, what are in the cupboards or what's in the freezer, and just take care of myself. And that means for me really, really work in a rigorous program right now. And that's what I'm doing. I really spend so much of my time, and I can be thankful for that because I'm not on Facebook or YouTube anymore. I don't have time for it. And I'm grateful for that. I just realized that the other day. It's like, well, I haven't even been on the internet. It's like I'm just soaking up podcasts and meetings every day and reading and outreach calls. And it's wonderful to call someone all throughout the day, not just first thing in the morning, and be done with it for the day, like get it out of the way. It's like really a tool that I'm using at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when I feel like I just need to hear a recovering person or a recovered person that I can make a phone call. And they're there at the other end, willing to receive it, but not only willing to receive it, be excited to receive it. And that means a lot to me, and I'm just so grateful.
Please.
I'm grateful where I'm at. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. All right, so we have a couple more minutes left. If anyone wants to share, we're on page 102, starting with many of us keep liquor in our homes. And we read through two paragraphs ending with about alcohol by one who hates it. Is there anyone who wants to share?
Kristen R.
Kristen R. Hannah B.
All right, go ahead. Oh, Hannah or Anna?
Hannah.
Hannah B. Okay, we'll stop with those two.
Is Christine there time for R. one more after or no?
Is this Nadia? Who is this? Okay, so we'll go with Christine R. right now.
Okay, can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Thank you. My name is Kristen R. I'm a grateful compulsive overeater in Virginia, and we keep liquor in our cupboards. I was amazed when I came in the program and I got abstinent, how I could still bake cookies for my kids and not eat them and not eat the dough while I was cooking it. And it's been nothing short of a miracle to have been given that gift. And it is a gift to be free from that obsession with food. I'm so grateful for it. I have to be careful because I still have a lot of self-obsession. I can still get very self-obsessed around because I'm not focused on the food. Now I'm focused on my weight and what I look like and what other people think of me. And I just have to keep coming to meetings, keep listening to the message, and keep reading the big book to remind myself that the best thing I can do is to be of service. When I want to get out of myself, when I want to get out of my head, when I want to solve all my problems, the best thing I can do is to be of service. And that can be in a lot of different ways. That could be making healthy meals for my family. That could be making an outreach call to a sponsee. That could be picking up the phone for an unknown number that calls. There's just so many ways to be of service, and I just need to remember that service is the path forward. And with that, I pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. All right, Hannah B., if you want to take us out.
Hi, Hannah B., compulsive overeater. Thank you for letting me share. Thank you all for being on this meeting. My heart is just filled with just so much gratitude for the miracle of neutrality and relief. I was just a slave and anesthetized with food my entire life. And to the point where I didn't even know I was doing it. And I was in recovery, and I worked the 12 steps in another program, and I didn't realize that food was my drug, because I thought I was able to control, there was an illusion of control and I was able to maintain normal weight. For me,
Neutrality is just everything, because that's freedom. I'm able to be present when I'm food neutral, because I'm either food neutral or I'm not. It's like one or the other. If I start getting pulled a little bit, like, it's almost like my old sponsor used to say, God has her on a shorter and shorter leash. Like, the more she gets spiritually aligned and the more freedom she gets, the less she can get out there, because it's like, it's just too uncomfortable. I object too much to any lack of neutrality, because I just only want to experience and feel that freedom. And so if my neutrality does start to get pulled at all, which happens, because I have to be so vigilant in staying in action in this program, I either have to check my ingredients very carefully, because the allergy's been kicked up somehow, unbeknownst to me, or I need to check my program and my spiritual maintenance, and what am I doing? And I can't let up. I just can't. But it's like, I don't want to. I don't want to let up, because the freedom is just worth, like, it's just worth any amount, you know? And I have a bunch of kids and a husband and all kinds of food all over my house. So I'm just so grateful that it doesn't constantly call my name anymore. So anyways, bless you guys. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Hannah. All right, so we will close the meeting now. So we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will I, Eileen M., please read a vision for you? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Hi, this is Eileen M., recovered compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.